You are listening to Any Given Sunday Australia.
Alrighty, joining me now is another punter out of the factory that is Pro Kick Australia. He's a former AFL aspiring talent that turned his hand into launching bombs in college football, and a mutual friend of ours. When I asked him about you, he said you were one of the greatest humans alive. So that's pretty big to live up to. He's a former Terp and Bruin, Mr. Wade Lees. How are you, mate?
Good, mate. Thanks for having me. I suppose following in the footsteps of Tim Gleeson, it's always hard to do, but I appreciate that comment from him, because he doesn't give out many, let's say that.
No, he's very, when I've asked him about a few people, he's very close to the chest, so the fact that he said that is huge.
Yeah, he is. He's a good fella, Tim. He's doing great things at Pro Kick as well. I think he's injected that, let's say, little bit of, I suppose, youth into it as well, as you see Chappie and Johnny getting a bit long in the tooth. But Timmy's obviously got great things for Pro Kick, and he's helping them out immensely.
Yeah, absolutely. And I imagine Chappie, he's a big listener of this show, so wonder how you'll be with the long in the tooth comment.
Nah, he'll be fine, mate. He'll just be sitting back there just sipping on his reds. I'm sure he'll be happy to pass over the bat.
Yeah, we were in a chat the other night. Was it wasn't the reds he was drinking? He was on the I can't remember what he was drinking. Maybe some whiskey or something like that during the draft the other night.
Oh, the draft. I know. He was. I actually stiffed him on that one as well, because I got the number one overall pick, and Timmy sent me a little message saying that he wants McCaffrey at number three. So I was actually going to take Jefferson, but I thought, nah, stuff it. I'm going to take McCaffrey at number one because he wanted it. So
I was number two, so I was happy to take Jefferson, mate. So I appreciate that. Timmy's coming through with the goods again. How good's this? Brilliant. I appreciate it, mate. It has been a long time coming with life and everything getting in the way. But the two boys that are normally on with me have life in the way at the moment, so you're stuck with me. And they always give me a bit of shit about this first question, but I just like to kind of get in the mindset of who you are and the kind of guy we're talking to. And so three people that you'd have, dead or alive, at a dinner party, mate?
It's been too few and far in between drinks. So people I've probably been at the dinner party with, but I'd probably say four. It would be Jack Sheldon, Tom Sheldon, the two Sheldon brothers. One went to UNC, the other one at Central Michigan, and then the old John Smith, the Pro Kick legend, and Tim Gleeson. So whenever we're around a dinner table, it's always good fun. So the night tends to go long.
How does Johnny go keeping up with all your young bucks, though?
I've got a good story about Johnny. We were when I first went over to America, I was trialing a few colleges, and one of the first colleges was in Utah, so Salt Lake. And we're going through as a crew, as I usually do once a year. And who was there at the time? Tommy Hackett was there, and Mitch was just about to take over him. And we went out on the froths that night, and we might have had a few too many. And Johnny and I were going top to tail, and I ended up coming home shit-faced at about 3 a.m. and Johnny was already in bed, and I couldn't remember anything, and ended up coming back and ended up spooning him and ended up waking up and trying to push me out of the bed. He couldn't roll me out, so he ended up jumping out of the bed, and I think jumping in with Tommy Hackett. So yeah, no, he's good old Johnny. He's
awesome. So. A lot of stories about Johnny staying up till 2-3 in the morning messaging all the colleges, so a genuine legend when it comes to that sort of thing.
Absolutely.
You haven't mentioned, but Melbourne born. Whereabouts did you grow up and born and raised?
Yeah, so I wouldn't say country, but I was born up, I grew up around Mount Evelyn area, yep. So the Yarra Valley. So I grew up there up until I was about 16. So I played junior footy out there at Mount Evelyn, the Rovers. So, and then moved out towards, I wouldn't say Bayside, but I suppose Frankston area. So Skye. Seaford area, and then now residing Bayside, so in Bentley area. So shopped around a little bit here and there, but yeah, so gone from, I suppose, what you'd call it, the east to, I suppose, south, and then
just checking out all the areas, mate. Just checking the sites along the way. That's it.
Yeah, that's
and
it.
You mentioned it. That you grew up playing football. Was it only football? Was there any other sports? Was it cricket or anything else?
Yeah, played a little bit of cricket up until I was about, I don't know, about 16. And played a little bit of basketball up until I was about 14. So I played rep ball out at Dandenong Rangers. But, yeah, footy sort of took over, I think, under 14s and just sort of flourished from there. So,
and what kind of player were you when you were playing?
Wasn't the most talented, so let's say that. Still not, but suppose I'd say probably hard worker. So just used to play across the back flank, used to like the uncontested possession. So not going near my man, walking up to him at the start of the game, shaking his hand and saying, I'll see you at the end of the game. So just that type of player.
I read a few articles saying that you were a half-decent player. So is it this you being, just too generous about yourself or?
Nah, I was all right. I suppose I was okay, but I wasn't the most talented player. So everything I got was what I had to work for. So,
were you the typical Aussie kid, AFL being the dream, or were you not quite that?
No, definitely. So sort of went through my juniors, ended up playing at East Burwood in under 18s, trying to get on the TAC Cup list. Played a couple of games at Sandy Dragons, didn't eventuate out of there, and then went out to Casey, straight out of under 18s, Casey Scorpions, and it was back when they had the development league. So I look at VFL at the moment and there's no development league, and I look at those kids or all the guys that are missing out, and it sort of sucks because that was a pathway for me to play almost 100 odd games at VFL level. So so it took me a while. It took me 2-3 years to actually establish a spot there and solidify, playing at that level. But then once I did, ended up sort of going along that journey. And, it took me a while. As I said, bit of a journeyman. Hard work is obviously what got me there, but it wasn't off. Certainly wasn't off my talent.
I feel like hard work has progressed to get you everywhere you've been, especially over to the States, which all the guys I've spoken to, it definitely takes hard work. We spoke about this offline before, but I found an article when I was looking about you, and it said AFL, that the headline was AFL career crueled by a supplement he never took. Can you go through what happened? And it led to an 18-month ban. Like, how does that happen?
It sounds like that you picked out the good article. Geez, you wouldn't have wanted to read the headlines.
There was only
the
limited
ones
I was looking at.
I'll have to call up that reporter and thank you for that one. So ordered a supplement from America. Funnily enough, the country I ended up moving to. So, as we know, America's very much into their sort of supplement, pharmaceuticals, all that. So the pre-workout I ordered there was illegal here. Unbeknowing, ordered it in my name to my address. I didn't even get the supplement. I think I said to Caitlin, my wife, who's my wife now, said, I tell you what, geez, that supplement hasn't come. It's been like 3 months. And then ended up getting a phone call from ASADA saying, we've actually intercepted it and it's illegal because you're on the Australian Sporting Registry. So obviously under professional athlete. So got that. And then so ASADA flew down from Canberra. This is how naive I was. They interviewed me at the time. They said, was this yours? I said, yeah, of course. Well, it was in my name to my address. So unbeknownst, they were essentially not setting me up, but just putting all the pieces together to formally, I wouldn't say charge, but to follow through with their attempt to suspend me for this product. So, and then, went through probably about a year of sort of back and forth. I reckon it cost me about $15,000 on a sports lawyer, I tell you what. So they were gone for 24 months, and it usually is an automatic 2-year ban. So they got the 6 months wiped off, and so I coppered on the chin. And, it was a little bit frustrating at the time, I suppose, thinking back to even me speaking about being a journeyman, obviously coming through the development league and whatnot, of Casey Scorpions, like playing twos. And then last 3 years, I'd built up sort of a resume in the VFL and was starting to get a name and whatnot, and had a few AFL clubs interested. And yeah, for that to happen, I think it was coming. I think it was coming like sixth in the listing halfway through the year, or like fifth in the listing. So I was playing some good footy, which is obviously the VFL League Best and Fairest. And then to get that letter to wipe me out, as they say, you do the crime, you do the time. Yeah. But I actually never did the crime, so which is pretty frustrating. Never even got the product. So after they end up rubbing me out for 18 months, I said, well, can you at least give me the shit so I can have it? Which actually never come. So
we'll hit them up for, I'm sure it probably cost $100. Come on, boys, give me money back.
Yeah, no, that's it.
Oh, bastards out.
So it's probably like $100.
It's probably worth more now than it was back then too. Like, geez. A tough situation, especially, like you said, besides being a little bit naive and purchasing something that was technically, well, it's not illegal, it's just illegal for you to have. What kind of positives did you take out of it going forward into, you know, as we mentioned before, jumping overseas, and that's, you know, a pretty big situation to get into. Did you take any positives that helped you going forward?
Immediately, no. So I honestly didn't really know what I wanted to do. I sort of always wanted to go travel. Obviously, Australian football season is in the middle of the European summer. So being so heavily involved in Australian football with the demands of training and whatnot, it was hard to sort of separate that time to get over there. So that just freed up that. So what essentially I did is I thought, stuff it, I'll just go travel for the year I'm off. And I suppose it ended up just ironing out itself out to the path I ended up coming on, because my wife now, Caitlin, and we were traveling back then through Europe. And then on the back end of that trip, we ended up in America. So we wanted to do that. So I met my mum in New York after Europe. And so she flew in. She'd never been overseas before. So we agreed to that. So we're traveling down the East Coast, ended up down in Miami, and hadn't crossed over for an NFL game yet. It was NFL season, and just so happened Tampa were playing the Philadelphia Eagles in Tampa. So I ended up driving across to Tampa, and we're sitting in our partner room, and the college football was on. I had no idea how big it was, or sort of the crowds that college got to in their stadiums. And I think it was an Ohio State Penn State game come on, and then next minute it's like Cameron Johnson from Melbourne, Australia, is coming on to punt. And I'd played at Casey with Cam when Cam was a rookie at Melbourne. So I'd known Cam really well, and I sort of lost contact with him probably for the last 2 years. He was obviously in America. I had no idea. Anyway, so I shot Cam a message just on Facebook, and I was like, man, like, that's awesome. What are you doing? This and that. So I hit him up, and he passed on Chappie's details. And unbeknown also, so that Philadelphia Eagles game that I went to watch, Chip Kelly was coaching, who ended up being my coach at UCLA. So it was pretty cool just how everything ended up aligning it. And I actually like told him that story, so he had a good chuckle about that. But yeah, after that trip to America, I come back, reach out to Chappie, and then yeah, the ball started rolling.
You've taken my next question perfectly, which is that the catalyst for the punting, and how did you get onto pro kick? So when you got back, did you have a go again at AFL, or was it from then on, now look, I'm going to try and give this a crack?
No, so I come back to footy. So I played, so I went down to, I had a few Casey boys leave Casey. So when I come back, and went to Frankston. So I went down and played at Frankston for a year. Started playing good footy there as well. So, but then halfway through the year, the conversations kept snowballing with pro kick once I'd reached out. Obviously, I'm sure as you know, mate, once Johnny's in your ear and you end up on a 2 hour conversation with him and he's sort of wooing you to come across and whatnot, he's pretty hard to say no to. So, towards the end of that year, after various videos you'd been showing me of the crowds and lifestyle and whatnot, I'd pretty much made up my mind.
So, all right, you've made up your mind. Johnny's got you. Where does it go from there? Is Timmy involved yet, or is it just purely Chappie?
Nah, Timmy wasn't involved. So Timmy was helping out Johnny with my academics getting across, because I was a high school dropout. I dropped out halfway through year 11. So it was a pretty hard line for me to get to. It wasn't a straight line. So we had to sort of go in and through a few back doors, which I was sort of the example case for a lot of people going through now. So essentially what I'd had to do is, obviously without having any graduation or anything, or from high school, someone to get accepted into university is pretty much slim, especially over here. So I think the course, I applied for like six universities and just a bunch of degrees I literally didn't give a shit about. I just wanted to get in to build up enough transferable credits so I could build my credit score up to transfer over there. And essentially the hardest course with the highest ATAR, all seven of them said no. And I got into, I think it was sports management, which you needed 85 or 89% on your ATAR or Enderscore or whatever it's called now. And they ended up accepting me. So that was just lucky. It all just fell in the line. So ended up going back to university after, like, or hadn't been to school in 10 years. I rocked up with bloody backpack and pens, and I was like, shit, what am I, I didn't even know what notes to take or anything to take. I had no idea. So I was a fish out of water, essentially. So, but just studied my ass off and did what I needed to do and got the runs on the board. And then, just continued to train. I was playing footy at Yarrawonga that next year. They pay well, that is. So that's why I went up there, just to save some cash. So that was my final year. So while I was doing that, studying, working a little bit, and then just pretty much just putting everything in a line to take off.
Was that with Fev up at the Pigeons, or was he not there yet?
No, he was. That was with the big fella. So he got me up there for me last year because I played with him at Casey. So we struck a good friendship up there. So, or at Casey and then up there as well. So we had a few good nights up there. He used to have a house. They used to get him for the year down there. So,
I can only imagine. I remember videos of him sinking piss while he was playing the game. So I can only imagine what after the game was like. So how long did you have to go to uni and to get the runs on the board to, you know, just to give people an idea of if you are a dropout but you still want to, you know, pursue this kind of career, how long were you at uni and to try and get those credits?
I think it was about a year all up. So, and then even then, it wasn't guaranteed, just because there was so much uncertainty over this whole pathway, because it wasn't conventional. It was different. So some universities didn't want to take the chance or would stuff you around with the academics, or Johnny, as you know, would be blowing people's phones up to try and get me in, but they'd be like, nah, it's too difficult. We just need someone that's straightforward for us to deal with, because essentially taking someone from Australia, it's foreign to them. And then because they don't know the academic pathway, or Johnny had just gotten them used to the traditional or the usual academic pathway of someone finishing high school and having the credits to transfer. So my pathway was completely different. So it was never a guarantee. So we had a lot of schools that were certainly interested, but then once they had a sniff of what actually it sort of took, just hit the heels running. So
Ended
up all working out.
I know Timmy, especially when he came on, he really does try and stress for people, get your academics in line, because it makes our job a lot easier. When it all fell in the line, you had the grades, you were throwing out offers, you know, Johnny was on the phone at 2-3 in the morning. Maryland comes up, and do they pitch to you, or do you pitch to them? And then how do we go about accepting that offer and jumping in over there?
So there was a few schools. So I was originally pretty much committed to Michigan at the start. So Blake O'Neill was there, and then Jim Harbaugh fired John Baxter, their special teams coach. So I'd committed there and everything was in line. Then John Baxter knew that his end was running, and then Jimmy Harbaugh was like, nah, just want a conventional American punter. So that fell through. Then we went on a pro kick trip mid-year, and then Johnny had set some stuff up for me. So we went out to Georgia. I had a kick out there. Yeah, that's a funny
story.
I shit the bed in that camp. So essentially, I didn't do well. So Johnny bought this famous T-shirt. It was a Hawaii T-shirt, and Johnny's on the side. So had it wasn't Kirby Smart, or was it? I can't remember. So like the head coach, whoever was there at the time, there was a bunch of punters snapping, and Johnny's just staring at me from the side, just with these piercing eyes. So I felt more pressure from Johnny staring at me than anyone else out there. And Johnny's like, Johnny, what's that shit shirt you're wearing? And he's like, oh, this is me Scott Harding shirt. Apparently he wore it to when Scott Harding was at Hawaii, and it got him a scholarship. So he goes, this is my good luck T-shirt. Anyway, so I went out there, pretty much shit the bed, didn't go to plan, like had these shitty V1 Vapor, Nike Vapor balls. I couldn't hit it to save myself. It was just, I put one in the bloody trash can, like 20 yards shanked. And the coach goes, oh, geez, that was good accuracy, like taking the piss. Anyway, so come off. Anyway, I look up. Anyway, as I'm walking off the field, Johnny's fuming. He's just pacing up and down the field. On the way out, Johnny fills his bag up with Georgia balls. He goes, fuck it, we've got to take something from here. On the way out, anyway, so we're walking to the car park. Johnny rips the bloody Hawaii shirt off, rips it up, and then throws it into someone's front lawn. And he goes, well, that was useless, wasn't it? So we hit the car, didn't speak to each other for the whole trip home, but no, the next day we're fine. So I end up going to Georgia, and then that night, I went back to the room. I was pretty harsh on myself. And then a few of the boys were going out to Topgolf. I don't know if they want me saying this, but too bad. I'll throw them under the bus here. And then a few of the boys are going to Topgolf, like Jake Eakwood, Tommy Hackett, Johnny and that. I think Mitch Wishnowski. And I stayed home because I was pissed off myself. I'm competitive. And I had a workout at Clemson the next day. So anyway, so they went out and Johnny goes, yeah, I'll be back. So we're leaving at 5 or 6 a.m. Anyway, so I've gone to sleep, come back. I've gone to sleep, and then they're meant to be staying in my hotel room. And I woke up at 1, they weren't back, so I went back to sleep. Woke up at 3, they weren't back. Fuck, woke up at 4:30, they still weren't back. Anyway, they all roll in at bloody 5:30 in the morning. Asked them where they'd been. They couldn't explain. Anyway, so I could chuck them all in the car, straight from there, straight to the workout. Johnny and Jay could pass out in the back of the car. And then rocked up to this workout and ended up crushing it. So ended up working out well. So, but it was a long few days for Johnny for sure.
And he lost the good shirt. So.
Yeah, he did. Oh, well, it wasn't good.
It was good for Scott Harding, I'm sure. Nah, actually, that does. So, how do we get on? You said that was at Clemson, was it, or was that at Maryland?
Yes. Yeah. Sorry, mate. I just lost the track there. But yeah, so that was obviously Clemson. So I went and spoke to Clemson then. So they had a punter there. Obviously, Dubbo Sweeney wanted to stick with the American pipeline. Danny Pierman, the special teams coach, wanted to double into the Australian pipeline, but no, it didn't end up eventuating. And then it sort of went stale for a little bit. And then Southern Florida come on sort of and then come off. And then what happened, actually ended up sort of a two-way race between North Carolina and Maryland. Maryland said they'll take me in the January, so this come to like October, November. And then North Carolina said they couldn't open up the scholarship till the June, July. So we said we're better off with the scholarship we've got than the one that we're promised. So Coach DJ Durkin, he was at Michigan as well. So that's how that all sort of fell into place, because he was a defensive coordinator at Michigan when I was committed to them. And then he got the job at Maryland. And then when he come across, John Baxter said, hey, take this guy, he's pretty good. So then Coach Durkin ended up reaching out to me ended up committing to there.
Beautiful.
To University of Maryland.
How was it? So your decision's all made, you're diving headfirst into, moving overseas, over to the States. How did you find it, committing to go over there for 2, 3, 4, 5 years, however long it was going to be?
No, that was fine. Like, I've traveled a fair bit in my life, so I had no hesitations as well. So, took my wife over there with me, so she sacrificed a lot, which is pretty cool. So, big shout out to her. So she sacrificed a lot to come over. So I was very grateful with that and share that experience. So, I took essentially a part of home with me, which was cool. So it definitely made the transition a lot easier. And then, therefore, I always had that sense of security. Otherwise, a lot of these other guys sort of going home from 20 years old with no sort of support family, whereas I was older as well. I think I was like 26. So had that sense of, I wouldn't say maturity because I'm still not mature, but yeah, sense of, I suppose, life.
I did, that's another one. You're just leading me straight into my questions perfectly. I saw a comment in a in an article that you were a part of saying, if you had a dollar for everyone who mentioned your age, you'd be rich. So I'm going to go down that path and just say, how was it being the older guy, you know, either on the team or in the classroom, just adjusting to that college life? And I'll give you a dollar as well.
no, it, mate, to be honest, it was fine. It's like, as I said, I act pretty young, so I'd actually had a few senior Packers fans, Darnell Savage, he was a teammate of mine. So I remember sitting in the trainer's room once and one of the boys come in and was like, oh, shit, wait, I forgot how old you are. And then Darnell was like, shit, man, you really are old, aren't you? How old are you? And I was like, oh, 27, 28. And like, man, you're like as old as my dad. And I always started giving you shit and stuff. But no, it was quite cool because obviously – they would forget how much older I was. So obviously I blended in well with that. But for me as well, or just for like most Australians, it's normal because essentially in Australian football, you're playing senior footy when you're 16, 17, 18. So you're used to playing with 30, 35-year-olds anyway, like mature age bodies. So for me, it was fine. For them, it was lucky they got an immature 28-year-old.
Perfectly worked, yeah. You spent 3 years at the Terps. How was it, you know, after all this trouble at home, working out, getting drunk and driving people to Clemson at 4 a.m, walking out for your first game and that first punt? I think it was Howard University. Was that your first?
It was Howard, yep. I vividly remember that. I remember not getting any sleep the night before. So, and I've never really been nervous over anything, but just, yeah, I suppose that first game for sure. It was, I suppose, looking back and even in that moment of when I did get suspended, you thought, like, you think, what can possibly good come out of this? And then I say this to people now that I try and convince to go to America. I'm playing footy now. There's a few Deer Park boys who are super talented who I'm trying to get in their ear, and they're playing VFL sort of the same path as me. And the moment when you run out and there's 60, 70,000 people there, and that's what you're essentially aspired to do back in Australia by playing AFL, and you're living a professional lifestyle with all the weights, you've got the crowds, you've got obviously the nutrition, you've got the facilities and the equipment and everything, and you're pretty much living a professional lifestyle. So running out, it was sort of a, why did I give a shit so much about VFL football? I was playing in front of 30 people trying to like chase its dream when I've literally played in front of 70,000 people now. So it just sort of made me think how much of a bubble we are in over here and how insulated we are trying to, and like, there's nothing wrong with it. It's you don't know what you don't know, but that's why I try and spread the awareness so much of there's this whole other world out there and so many Australians could be doing it, but they just don't know about it. So it was a bit of a reflection sort of on the past and just say, obviously there was something.
And do you have any games that stick out over that 3 year period? Because you played against a few, you know, top five teams. They might have put you to the sword, but you played a few big games.
Yeah, probably. I'm trying to think. It was funny. So we're playing Ohio State. I think it was my last year. My last year at Maryland. So it was my junior year. There was all turmoil at Maryland. Our coach got fired at the start of the year. And then Matt Canada come in and took over. He was the offensive coordinator. And, he was pretty cool. He just let me do what I want. Older, he just said, look, you just go out and do what you want. Like, you're dominating. Anyway, so all week, so I think we were 5-6. We just missed out on a bowl game that year, and we come up against, I think, like number 3 ranked Ohio State. That was stacked. They had Chase Young. Who did they have a quarterback? I think JT Barrett. They had JK J.K. Dobbins, I think it is, just absolutely stacked. Chris Olave. Anyway, so before the game, because I was sort of joking about it, I was like, man, I reckon I could break the record for punts today. I was like, all right. And I said to our long snapper, I said, it could be 12. I said, just stay warm all day. Anyway, and because Ohio State send the house. They literally throw packages in where they're looping and weaving and you don't know what's going on. And I joked about it and I said, oh, look, we should just throw a bank account on Ohio State because we're going to lose. Anyway, and then we come out and literally we come out and smack, I think it was 18-3 in the first quarter. Ant McFarlane, who's now at the Steelers, rushed for like 2 touchdowns in the first quarter. We had him on the ropes. And then all week in practice, we had this fake punt running. So it snapped back to me. I rolled to my left. The guy who was the gunner on the right pretty much he faked the run down the field and then cut back through in between the long snapper and the shield. And then I drew the rush and then just popped it over the top. And it got blown up all week. Anyway, so it was 31-31 in the last quarter and they've called it on a going inside punt. Anyway, and so I'm sending back then, of course, and I said to the shield, I was like, what, the fake punt? And they're like, yeah, the fake punt. And I was like, fuck, no way. There's no way you're calling it now. Sure enough, they called it. Anyway, so Urban Meyer's on the side. They sent the house after me, as they do. Just worked out perfectly. A big window opened up, popped it over to Tavon Jacobs. He rushed the first down. We ended up going down and scoring on the next drive. And have a look at over Urban Meyer's bloody pulling his hair out on the side. And I think we're up. 37-31 or something. I'm not too sure of the score, but and then we had a kickoff. I think they needed to score a touchdown in a minute. Oh no, that was who it was, Dwayne Haskins. Dwayne Haskins drove 90 yards in a minute and then scored and then took them to overtime and then they ended up beating us in overtime. So we went for the extra two. And then yeah, they ended up beating us. But that was probably one moment that stood out, just that elation of actually executing that play when it got blown up all week in practice and, seeing that come to fruition.
That's probably the best play that I've had described on this show, which is awesome. Even just to have the agates to do it and pull it off, I think is huge. When you got, 110, 115 kegs running at you every time. And I reckon Urban Meyer's had a few worse days since that day. So.
A few, yeah. Oh, 100%. Sorry, mate, I'm just going to... Yeah, he has. I was just watching that Swamp Kings as well, so it didn't. I think there's a.
Yeah, I haven't watched that one yet. I look forward to watching it, but I'm spewing. They've cut a few things out, but that's all right. I've mentioned a few friends of the show that have asked some questions, and one actually sent in a question. It might be the same person. I'm not going to give it away, but he said you took them out to some local pubs in Washington DC. Are you able to go into a bit of detail about those kind of nights? he wants the detail, not me. I'm just asking the questions.
Was it Ryan? I know. Who was it?
It was Tim again.
No, was it? No, not Ryan. Who was it? Oh, no. Yeah. No, Tim. No, that's right. Tim with Caden. That's right. His mate. Was it? Yeah. So it was Rutgers versus Maryland, and we beat them there. And I said to the... boys, they ended up staying down. Tim was shit-faced with my old man. They were smashing back jugs since 10 a.m. So I ended up finishing coming out. And so we ended up hitting a bar in D.C. I said to the boys, I was like, yeah, I come here. I go to this joint all the time. This is a good bar. And it was. But little did I know, the Uber dropped us off and probably had a skin full. Walked into the wrong bar anyway, and so Tim's with his mate Caden from Melbourne, and like, are you sure this is the right bar? And I was like, yeah, mate, I come in here all the time. Anyway, and then so we go upstairs, and they're both like, man, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, no, it is. Anyway, so then we get to the top rooftop and looking around, and it's like, fuck, sorry, boys, it's the wrong bar. Ended up being the gay bar across the road. There's a big rainbow flying from the top. I was like, that's the bar over there. So anyway,
Tim would have had a great night there, I'm sure.
Yeah.
I can see why he wanted that story told, though. But we'll get back to a little bit more serious. Year four, leaving Maryland, was that because of the coach blowing up and things like that? Because year four sees you ship over the other side of the states to UCLA.
Yeah, so I actually got along really well with Coach Durkin. So the coach got fired. I think there was obviously, if you want to go read the articles, it's pretty brutal, but there was a massive misconception of obviously everything that went on. Essentially, he's just trying to strive for excellence and perfection. Some people in life don't like tough love. And unfortunately, the way society is going, everyone just wants to be cuddled and looked after. And so the way his coaching style and the way he come in, and people didn't want to strive for that excellence and put in that work and obviously earn that respect. And they end up getting moved on, which then created friction and whatnot amongst the playing group. And yeah, so that created divide and whatnot. And tragically, one of our teammates ended up passing away, which then I feel the result of that was used in the way that he was coaching. And then everything snowballed from that. And a bad narrative was painted in his behalf, which is bullshit. Anyway, but yeah, so after that, after he ended up leaving, essentially I had a year left and Caitlin was over the cold. So it was either go home or let's look for somewhere on the West Coast. So essentially they had Mike Loxley coming in and he had his crew coming in. I'd already graduated my master's. So I'd done an undergraduate and a master's from there, just finished my master's in business. So I still had another year. I wasn't going to start another master's there. So reached out, I put my name in the portal, and Alabama and UCLA come on strong. Alabama was going to fly me out for their spring game, and then they had a punter who was on scholarship already. He wasn't performing. I think his name's Skylar DeLong. So, and then he actually ended up playing really well in his spring game, and then so they're like, no, we'll keep him. And then they sort of come back hot again, and then UCLA were just hot the whole time. Said, look, take, if you want it, it's here, we'll take you out. So I just said, look, same sort of decision. I'm better off with a team that wants me than the one sort of half in, half out. So, which wasn't a bad option to say the least. So, obviously couldn't get to USC because Benny Griffiths was there, which is fine. I would have preferred Westwood.
But over it's South, just as warm there anyway. So. It doesn't matter which end side of the state you're on.
No, that's right. I don't have to lock my tyres up. Or
they probably have to lock them up from you, so. I imagine. Yeah. I do have to, actually. Well, I have travelled to America once and did walk away with one shirt, so I better put that back on. But, yes, I am.
I'll have to bring you one back.
Oh, absolutely. Next time
I'm over there, I'll have to bring you one back.
Yes, I did notice that. As soon as I saw it, I went, I've got to remember to get that shirt out of I was wearing. How was the time in LA for that one season?
Awesome. I suppose the differences between the two conferences, Big Ten's awesome. It's like you've got the culture, you've got the crowd. I know you've spoken to boys before. You've got your Ohio State's 115,000, same as Penn State. Wisconsin's just a scene inside itself. You've just got the tradition. It's more just football mad, stir crazy. Pac-12 is what it is. Unbelievable weather, good football, but the crowds aren't there. The culture, the tradition. It's not really a traditional college football town. Obviously, you're in Beverly Hills. You've got LA there. It's not sort of so much your college parks or like your college stations where you've got your frat towns and all that sort of stuff, where it's traditional college football. So, but in saying that though, it was an unreal change up. So UCLA, as I said, it was a pretty cool experience, especially coming into a summer. So I think Caitlin and I got there in the June and then in summer workouts. So we hit summer workouts and obviously Coach Kelly was there, Chip Kelly. So he'd been in the NFL for a while and he obviously knows all the NFL players, so just like rocking up after practice and having Saquon Barkley, Tom Brady throwing with Gronkowski, Travis Kelce just catching to Patrick Mahomes. You'd have Russell Wilson, DK Metcalf, and Odell Beckham rocking up, and just literally just these guys you're just standing 2 foot from, just watching them do its craft is just something that you wouldn't get on the East Coast. So having that ability to experience that, and also furthermore get a another master's from UCLA, which is the most applied to university in the world. So it was pretty special to take away from.
I've stood close to Jesse Williams, and that was huge enough. But standing next to some of those names would be incredible.
Yeah.
I do have another question from Tim, but I'll leave it for the moment. I will, don't worry, but you finish up your degree. What was the draw card about coming home instead of staying over there then?
I think it was more, Caitlin was getting a little bit homesick, and obviously, as I said, the weather sucked. So literally getting down to minus 15 degrees Celsius in the winter, and it's just... Me being so football, it's, yeah, I suppose we bought a pet rabbit, but that didn't replace me. So her missing home, sort of not having that, but so change, I suppose, just a change of scenery as well. We're closer to home. It was one flight from home. So it's literally jumping a plane, you're 14 hours from home, rather than Melbourne to LA, LA to DC was like a 27-hour round trip. So from doorstep to doorstep. So there was a lot in it. So that way, at least it was just one flight from home if she wanted to get home. So, but I knew also going to a place like UCLA or somewhere warmer, it would help my football and sort of change things up. So it got a little bit stagnant there at Maryland just because I knew what it was. And more so because the coaches that I dealt with at Maryland as well, all they wanted do is just the traditional Australian stuff, which sort of it's good at the start to get confidence and comfortable, but then if you try obviously trying to go onto the CFL or the NFL or whatnot, and obviously, as you know, mate, seeing these guys, it doesn't really help. So we've seen Sipos, that's why he left early from Auburn to go, because it wasn't helping him by just rolling out. Cam Johnson as well, like he's one of the best punters in the NFL now, and it took him a year of being a free agent. He didn't even get drafted. He should have been at least a sixth round draft pick for sure. So getting out of that environment and sort of putting me in an environment where I was going to succeed. But in saying that, knowing a Chip Kelly offense, the bloke doesn't punt. So I went from punting 62 times a year to 32, and we lost, I think, 7 or 8 of our games. So... my production went down by half, and we lost more games.
Was CFL or NFL the ultimate goal, or?
Yeah, so at the end of that sort of tenure at UCLA, awesome year, didn't do great. I think we went 4-8. They were a building side then. So obviously, Dorian Thompson Robinson was. I think it was in his second year, so he's at the Bears now. He's at the Browns now, and he's killing it. So he was only in his second year. We had some like guys like Kyle Phillips, who's at the Titans. We had Tito, who's a defensive end, who got drafted to the Chargers. We had some great players who were up and coming, but still very junior. So the win streak wasn't there, but I suppose the experience and obviously. Like doing what I had, and then obviously coming out of that, training for the NFL was when literally COVID hit. So my pro day was meant to be like April 20th. They shut down everything April 16th, so I didn't even get to do a pro day. So it was pretty frustrating at that. And then essentially after I ended up finishing my masters all that year, still trained. Caitlin. Was pregnant then, and then sort of we were that, and that's when it was like, look, this is probably the end of the road. My back started playing up, had a few issues, and started the venture back home.
Say, the old so bones are starting too old,
so that walking stick started coming out.
You make the trip back from sunny California to wintry Melbourne. What does the days look like these days? You're playing. You're obviously down in Bayside. You're playing at Deer Park. What's life like at the moment?
Yeah, so just randomly come back and didn't know what to do. As I just mentioned, Caitlin was pregnant, didn't have a job. I had all my connections over in LA, which was, I suppose, a little bit frustrating because they were there with UCLA's network and what they have. Wasserman Sports. So they're a massive sports agency. I really want to get into sports agency. I had an internship lined up with them. And then, so they look after all sports. So I think they got like Russell Westbrook, James Harden, all these caliber of players. And I had an internship lined up with them. Obviously COVID hit and they went out of office and whatnot as well. So, I'd literally had meetings with Neil Moritz, who was a director of like 21 Jump Street. He did Sonic the Hedgehog. So it's gone all these premieres where like Jim Carrey was, and Mark Wahlberg did a movie and was at premieres with them through those connections. So going that to good old Bayside, it was a bit of a shit, how cool of life did I really have? But I suppose reflecting on that now, it's just more gratitude that I even got to experience that. So obviously come back here and it was just like a wake-up call. So like, what am I going to do? Applied for Uber. Like, that's how desperate I was. I had a family sort of that was going to grow. So I applied for Uber. And then I ended up falling into a good mate of mine who I played at Casey Scorpions with, Dave Collins. So he had a civil construction company and said, do you want to come back work with me? Drilling new comms pipe and whatnot into areas that need it. And I said, no, I don't want to work with you. Anyway, so he called me up and said, mate, why don't you just buy a traffic ute? And he goes, and then just service our utes. He goes, we'll pay you good money till COVID finishes, then try and get back into what you want to do. So I ended up buying one ute, and then I had a girl working along with me as my offsider. And then, yeah, we'd just go out, just set up pretty much a safe working environment for the workers while they're drilling. So I reduce speed limits, create exclusion zones around the workers so pedestrians aren't working the job sites, all that, and paid well. So I essentially started that with no intention of continuing it. Now I'm 2 years later, I've got bloody 17 utes and bloody 40 people. So I tell you what, that's all I was saying. It's hard to manage. People management, it isn't easy.
Pays the bills. So, that's all that matters.
Just to say the least. Well, that's it. It's like just crazy, the contrast in lifestyle. So even Caitlin last year and I, we went back to America, hadn't been back. Yeah, just field side at a UCLA game. There's obviously 70,000 in the stand. Of a night time, was staying at my mate JC Jackson's house. He's just signed an $80 million contract at the Chargers. So he's got a $5 million pad down Orange County. So he's got me driving his Bentley and stuff. And so I'm going from that lifestyle to that just in the click of a finger. So it's pretty cool that I've still got that ability to sort of touch that side of it, but then obviously come back here and still do what I do here.
You know more people than anyone I've ever had on this. it's incredible. But yeah, to be fair, your memory of Oregon, everything that I've asked you, you've been able to even write down to the correct score in your overtime game against Ohio State. You've got... No, it was. I was reading through it last night, so you did well.
I think it is.
Incredible, mate. It's a $6 million house and it's two Bentleys. I've got a couple of final questions. One of them is from Timmy, but I do want to thank you for your time, mate, getting on here. And yeah, it's gone for a lot longer than I was expecting, which is a credit to you and your talking abilities. the final question from Tim and then one from me is he wants to know that you moved from the east to the west and you got to see a fair bit of the states. What was your favourite vacation away from footy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Away from football.
he did tell me where it was. So.
the Hampton Strip for sure. There was a few reptiles floating around there. That's what I said. Jack Sheldon, Tommy Sheldon, and Timmy. That story always comes out. Or that
is it
that
something it's not safe for work? We can't really repeat, or
no, not really. Oh, yeah, some are, but Timmy's old quarterback at Rutgers, Chris Laviano. They were very well off, and they had a holiday house in the Hamptons. It's like a $4 million holiday house in Sag Harbor. The actual main house is like is like two houses down from Jordan Belfort from the Wolf of Wall Street. So I rocked up there for the first time, and a couple of Ferraris and two-story absolute mansion. Their guest house is bigger than my whole house. And yeah, so we went down to the holiday house, and it was, yeah, just literally the parties that were thrown there. It was 3 days of just nonstop entertainment, especially with us four together, just nonstop shit.
So I don't believe Timmy talks shit anytime, mate. That's a pure lie. My final question, a bit of a personal one. How are you going to go in the fantasy this year, mate? We are in a league together, as we spoke about earlier. I think I'll play you in week 7. So if you could lose that one, that'd be great.
No, I don't know. I drafted all right. I think started off with Josh Allen. I had him last year as well, so I know he does well. And then who I got? Alvin Kamara. He's out for 3 weeks, but I'm thinking long term with him. So he's got high production. And then obviously C-Mac, Christian McCaffrey. So as I said to you at the start, I knew Chappie wanted him, but so I'm going to come in and cut his lunch, which opened the way up with you and Jefferson.
It's Jefferson last year. It's a PPR league, mate. So Jefferson definitely going to go well. And I did look just before we come on that post the draft, the ratings of the team, I was number one. So good year for me looking forward, I reckon.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
Yeah, good point. I always start off real well and then I fade. So don't stress. By week 7, you'll well and truly have me covered. You'll have Kamara back by then, at least. But appreciate your time and coming on and telling a few yarns and letting people know that even if you are a year 10 dropout, you can still make it big over in the States and drive Bentleys around at some point. So really do appreciate you coming on.